altitude's undefeated.
Crap, rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge salmon,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and starting to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the early evening of Tuesday, February 13th, 2024. Joined now by Rabbi Mark Goodman. We have a hard out in an hour and 15 minutes right now, folks, so no fancy intro or anything. We got 11 questions that are going to define the 2024 Colorado Rapids season. This is a format that we have loved in terms of previewing the season. In the macro, we're going to talk some preseason stuff and then answer your questions as well. But Rabbi, first I have to ask, what are the big plans with the lovely lady Noah for tomorrow?
My wife is in Boston for a conference, so I will do nothing. I have we don't really do much for Valentine's Day. My mom used to always do like a red themed meal, and she would get chocolates, and my mom was really into the Valentine's Day, but not so much me and my wife. We're not really romantic on a specific date. We're kind of like more like we're not even really all that big on our anniversary. I think my wife forgets when our anniversary is more often than I do. We're big on birthdays. Like we take care of the birthdays, we take care of the kids. So you know, Noah doesn't really like chocolate, you know, and I buy her flowers almost every week, so we buy flowers for Shabbat, so that's kind of our thing.
So, okay, then. So yeah. So the Goodman marriage naturally has other areas in which Riz comes in, such that February 14th is not relevant. Rabbi's laughing, listeners, because I think that indicates that he knows what Riz actually stands for.
I put it in my last preview article. I was so proud that I used it. I have a seventh grader, so I get all the cool lingo, and then my kids are humiliated when I actually use it, so it's pretty bad. But
bet. All right, Mark. So listeners, we've got 11 questions. They're going to define the Rapid season, and then we'll do a bunch of other stuff on that. So, Mark, do you want to get us started asking me the first question?
Let's do this, Matt. All right, Matt Pollard, also known as Red, who came up with all these questions, by the way. So, props to Matt. Well done. Important leaders like Price, Rubio, and Yarborough are gone. Captain Tegan Rosenberry is a quieter individual. How will he do in his first year as Rapids captain? Does this dressing room have a leadership gap?
I think it has a gap in that it is not obvious to us who the new leaders will be, other than just assuming that it's Keegan and then maybe Cole Bassett and maybe one or two of the new signings that are coming in. When I spoke to Keegan Rosenberry for an article that I've been punting on because life has just been maddening and everything and crazy for reasons that I will not get into on the podcast that Mark is aware of, however. Keegan said that, you know, he got a lot of positive feedback and affirmation from the organization, from the coaching staff, from the players, and that the message that he received from Chris Armas and others was that he didn't necessarily need to be more than he was. He just needed to keep doing what he has been doing the last year and a half, 2 years with the Rapids as well. I do think that Chris Armas is maybe a louder or more charismatic voice in this locker room. So you compare it to Robin Fraser, who Marco, as we both know, can be very loud, but can be a little boring or a little bit monotone at times. So I think Chris Armas is filling some of that leadership gap. I think that Keegan Rosenberry is filling the void that was there, but just by being more of himself rather than trying to imitate a William Yarborough, a Diego Rubio, a Jack Price, certainly. And I think there will be other leaders who will make themselves known in the weeks and months to come based on how things go. I do feel very good about where this locker room chemistry and where the balance is between older players, young players, veterans, guys who are new to the league, guys who are familiar with the league. Worst case scenario, I think it's Zach Steffen yelling at the defense, and I think it's Jordy Mihailovic and Cole Bassett yelling in the midfield. And we'll see whether or not Connor Ronan gets any louder than he has been now that he knows he's not the quiet guy who's supposed to play next to Jack Price, but the one maybe leading things in the midfield. Rabbi Mark Goodman, also known simply as Rabbi, Jordy Mihailovic is a darn good replacement for Diego Rubio, but there are more doubts about who's playing in the six with Jack Price gone. Jasper Lufvelsen has come over from RSL, and there's some good impressions in terms of what he can bring, but at the end of the day, he was a lower drafted player in the MLS Super Draft. Lamine Diak is on a short-term loan with an option to buy. He is an unknown quantity in Major League Soccer and has going to have a steep learning curve for the Rapids to pick up that option. And Ralph Priso is still there, but we both have some doubts about him. Mark, who is filling Pricey's boots literally and metaphorically at the six? Will they be good enough? Are the Rapids going to recreate him in the aggregate Moneyball style?
Nice. That's well said. It is a really good question. My take is sort of a little bit none of the above, although it might be one of the above. So it is really hard to figure out whether we were going to see very early on whether the 4-2-3-1 is going to kind of focus on three central midfielders or five central midfielders. Okay. How much centrality are they going to play with? And how much is wing speed and kind of like, left wings and right wings who look more like forwards versus left wings and right wings who look like midfielders, right? Because there is a lineup in this team that could be kind of like Jackson 5, like, you know, J5MC's Jurassic 5, like, you know, five like a fist all together. And that would be Connor Ronan, Jordy Mihailovic, Cole Bassett, Lamine Diak, and any one of the other guys, which might be Lofelson, it might be Tavares, it might be, you know,
I think you missed right wingers, there, Mark. It might be one of the, Jonathan Lewis, Calvin
Yulu. Well, that's my point, which is it might be one of the wingers, but it might not. I mean, we might be playing with like more like midfielders. Now, Cole Bassett can play as a kind of a wingy wing player, but the story on Cole Bassett has been historically that he likes to play in the half spaces, that he's more of a midfielder than a proper winger. So the alternative is that it's Jordy Mihailovic, Cole Bassett, and Connor Ronan at the deep lying position, that Diak and Prizo and Lofelson are on the bench, and that you're playing with two proper wings, and that would be Cabral, and that would be Jonathan Lewis on the other side. So to some degree, I sort of answered your question by not answering your question, which is which of the three players that Matt asked about are most likely to kind of earn the permanent position. Of those three, I like Jasper Lofelson the most because he has MLS experience. He's played as a real six. And that he's a ball killing player, but I watched him as a player at Pitt. I watched the Pitt men's team for 2 years that Lofelson was on the team. And there he was an overlapping right wing who kind of ran the point. I mean, he was basically a right wing who started the attack kind of and moved high up the pitch. So I haven't really seen him as a defensive midfielder except playing for RSL. Lamine Diak is a complete black box. We know absolutely nothing about him. We are looking forward to finding out something about him. And Ralph Prizo is so far a known quantity, he's been fairly disappointing. But to be fair, I think every player gets the opportunity, especially when they're young, of growing. But I would say the least likely player, to see a lot of minutes is, especially at the early part of the season, is Ralph Prizo. So I answered the question by basically almost saying none of the above. I think the three midfielders who are going to be on the field the most and will earn the most minutes at the end of the season are Mihailovic, Bassett, and Ronan. And that means that those three will be mostly central. And that means that I think that Mihailovic will kind of be that the real six in that will be Ronan, that Mihailovic will kind of be the eight, and Bassett will kind of be the 10.
I think Mihailovic is clearly the left midfielder, but it's a good question mark of whether, because a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1 in terms of what the number 10 is doing, and then what the two wide attacking players who I think are going to be Omer Fernandez on the right mostly once he gets healthy, right. And then Jordy Mihailovic. Where are they in respect to the other midfielders? The other question that we haven't really brought up, Mark, and it would be nice if we had some film to see whether or not this looked like it. We have some doubts about whether or not Chris Armas wants more defensive fullbacks or guys who are going to be more modern fullbacks. And so is that fifth player, Mark, actually the return of the Vines back? All good questions.
We'll ask the Vines questions come later, don't they?
Yes.
All right. We'll save it for later. All right. Here we go. Question number three. Ollie Larraz and Sebastian Anderson, also known as Sebi, re-signed but are only guaranteed for 2024. Adam Beaudry is a homegrown as well. We'll probably get minutes for Rapids 2 again. The club unceremoniously moved on from Abe Rodriguez after years of hyping him up in front of microphones and cameras. Are the kids all right? Is this academy producing MLS caliber players, or are they overrated?
Relative to where the rest of the league is, Mark, and relative to what we have heard from members of the front office on the record, I've never been more, like, is optimistically skeptical, like the right words, like the, I want to believe in Ollie Larraz. I want to believe in Sebastian Anderson. I've seen them in training. I think we've seen enough from Sebi towards the final seven games of last season to where we can believe that he's capable of being a starter in MLS. But the fact that both of them are back on one-year deals, Abrod didn't come back. Obviously, the clock on Beaudry has just started. So we are 3 years away, pending something horrible off the field or a horrible injury. We are 3 years away from, I think, the club legitimately contemplating moving on from Adam Beaudry. But I think it's a valid question at this point of where's the Rapids Academy? Because fundamentally, the job of your academy, in terms of the first team, is to produce players capable of contributing to the first team. And in terms of regular starters on a Rapids team that is competitive in MLS 4.0, they have produced two of those, Sam Vines and Cole Bassett. So, and the other guys who can kind of be fringe guys, Mark, I'm not saying that they're not useful, but I don't think Rapids fans would be happy if the Rapids had eight Dylan Cernas out there getting regular minutes and the team was winning the wooden spoon. So Ollie Larraz has a lot of competition in midfield. I want to believe that he's capable of doing stuff. I know that Sebastian Anderson is capable of backing up Keegan Rosenberry. We'll see whether or not Sebi maybe becomes the go-to bench sub for both fullback positions, given that he's ambidextrous and there's going to be a lot of games that are going to be played. There's no really other right back on the roster, and the other one on the left would be Jackson Travis, who's looked okay for Rapids too. He's still a teenager, so his clock isn't quite there. But yeah, I have doubts, and I would not be shocked if at the end of this year we do not see all of the Rods, Sebastian Anderson, fully break in with the team, and then either mutually or from one party preferring it over the other, we see both of them leave the club, and that would dramatically shift for me my understanding and my belief in terms of what the club is doing, either in producing talent that is then capable of being signed to a homegrown contract, but then also making that pathway clear from homegrown contract to next pro to maybe getting loaned out to switchback to then coming into the first team. And if that pipeline is not clear, Mark, there's the people know that there's talent in Colorado. There's Griffin Dorsey. So does that talent start to look elsewhere? And so the Rapids have to make that very, very clear, and they have to give those opportunities. Chris Armas would be the perfect guy to bring in those guys and give them those opportunities. They have to prove it, and he also has to prove the commitment to them. Let's stay on the back line, Mark, for question number four. At the center back position, we have Andreas Mexo, the designated player, a regressed and increasingly expensive Lalas Abubakar, and then there's a bunch of kids. I think it's a fair argument that Mexo is a lock to start in a back four with two center backs of the Rapids this year, but who plays next to him? Moise Bombito had some moments. We talked about him a few weeks ago. Overall improvement, but there were some bad moments. Moise Bombito to the moon. Mark, which one of these too many young center backs who all need playing time are able to get on the field, or do we have question marks surrounding all of them?
We have question marks. I mean, I think this is if you're going to have, like, if we were going to clip out like 2 minutes, and actually I think Matt, you should give me your opinion when I'm done, but counter to the normal way we do things here, but this is the spicy question that people will cut 2 minutes out and comment on, and tell us, you know, in a week on Facebook or Twitter or whatever else platforms we're using these days, what idiots we are, that we're totally wrong. And I think that that's because people saw Moise Bombito being young and impetuous and making a few mistakes, but also having some really good moments and having some really good games. I think over 2 or 3 years, people are kind of tired of Lawless Abubakar. I always find that idea to be, having watched a lot of soccer for the last couple of years, like, you always sour on defenders. Every fan has a moment where they say, that guy cost us the game. Well, of course they did. That's a defender's job. The defender is the last thing standing between the Balrog and Gandalf. None shall pass, right? It's a really difficult job. And sometimes...
Is Zach Stefan Frodo in this analogy?
Or he's Gollum, right? Or maybe he's the one true ring. I'm not sure. But, you know, I mean, like, that's the thing, is, like, sometimes the Balrog smashes the bridge and Gandalf turns from Gandalf the gray into Gandalf the white. Like, that's how it goes, you know? There's no way to do it. My favorite, I think what we're going to see most likely is about 2,000 minutes, mostly at the front end of the season, for Lawless Abubakar, another 500 to 1,000 minutes for Moise Bombito, and about 500 minutes for Nate Jones. And the Nate Jones will get time more towards the end of the season. He might even see the beginning of the season, you know, either effectively, fully being loaned to R2 or being kind of sent down to R2 because he's been put on the reserve roster, right? Because if you're going to have three center backs in a two center back lineup, if you're going to have seven subs, then your obvious three center backs, the two who are likely to start, are going to be Maxo and Abubakar. And then the guy off the bench is likely to be Bombito. And in that case, you want Nate Jones to go to Commerce City and play. You know, like, you want him to play with R2. You want him down at DU. Sorry. The Michael Edwards, we have heard absolutely nothing about. We don't really know anything about whether he's kind of in the situation. There is very little news going on about Abubakar Keita, and so I assume that he is still kind of in the injury rehab phase of things, but they did sign a big long-term contract extension for him back in August. So I think that they think that Abubakar Keita, when he gets a little bit older and a little bit healthier, because he's only 23 years old, still has potential. But right now, the three guys I named are the front runners. I would not be surprised, though, if in July, August, September, we start to see the Nate Jones experiment, which I'm excited about. They're very high on him as being a game-ready guy, because he's a big body, and he's calm, and he's played NCAA minutes. So, and I would be all in favor of that. So, let me say this. I'm gonna be maybe the captain of the Nate Jones hype train. Maybe it already exists. Maybe DNVR has staked out that claim, but I want to be the engineer. I want to, you know, woo woo for Nate Jones. Here I go,
Mark. So I don't know if you've seen. I don't know if they've done it yet. I haven't caught up on DNVR. I haven't looked at my podcast feed at all today. But they were planning on doing their guy draft. Isn't like the when you say that such and such player is my guy and everything. So Mark, would you formally like to? I will let you draft Nate Jones over me in the HTHL. He is your guy for 2024.
We're assuming these are new guys, right? Nobody gets to be like, I claimed Sam Vines like a very long time ago. Claimed Sam Vines when he was like 17 years
old. Let's say new guys on there and then not coming back from Europe as well. There's a separate discussion for Vines, Jordy, Zach, and who's the other one who I'm forgetting? Maybe Lamine Diok in that. And then, sure. Yeah, they're in a separate category. Guys who are in their first year in MLS play and haven't played at a higher level. Rabbi Mark Goodman, are you formally drafting Nate Jones number one?
I'll take Nate Jones, but you could not fail if you took Kamani Stewart Baines instead, because that guy is also, I mean, it's really hard to claim a big body physical defender who's probably not going to score any goals and only going to get 500 minutes over a guy who's likely to bang in three. So you can be the glory seeker. You could take the hot boy,
with the number two pick in the HTHL, my guy, 2024 draft. Team Red selects from the University of Maryland forward GA player Monty Stewart Baines.
I kind of figured.
So answering the question directly here, Rabbi, unless he is sold to Europe because he absolutely balls out in the first half of the season and then possibly at Copa America, Moise Bombito will be the center back to get the most number of minutes for the first team other than Andreas Maxo. He has been playing with Maxo going back to the end of last year. He's been playing with him throughout the preseason and everything. What happens after that, I'm not entirely sure, Mark. Does Lawless want to be the vibes guy? And then, like, does Lawless want to be the dad of then the second pairing that you have for Open Cup, if Open Cup happens for the first team, or, you know, for a League's Cup rotation or for, like, the Wednesday night games or something? I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to Lawless about that specifically. He's a competitive guy. He's liked the playing time that he's gotten when he's gotten it in the past under Robin Fraser, and I don't know, Mark, that there's more than one of the other young guys that's going to rise above everything else. You know, Daniel Chacon is coming back from his ACL tear. I wouldn't be shocked, though this wouldn't be an advancement for his career, if he just takes all the summer to rehab, and then he's with R2 for the duration of the second half of the year. Mike Edwards has spent 2 years with Rapids 2. If he's spending a third year with Rapids 2, that's indicating to me one of two things, that he's clearly just not good enough to get in the first team, and or he's also it's not good for him and it's not good for the organization, because potentially he's getting in the way of another young center back coming up that Rapids 2 have signed to a Rapids 2 contract, or to a kid in the academy who could get some minutes before then going off to college come August, September. And so I have a hard time believing that of the guys who are clearly below Moise Bombito for me in terms of immediate present opportunity for the first team in the first third of the season, Nate Jones, Mike Edwards, Daniel Chacon, Abubakar Keita, I don't know that more than two of those guys are with this team, you know, certainly by this time next year, because they're going to have to break in, and there's only two spots right now. It's not, Armas does not see three quality center backs that warrant him playing a back three, a back five, and so I'm not entirely sure how they handle that. Mark, there's been some inconsistencies in terms of Abubakar Keita with the first team during preseason. He was not with them for at least some part of Mexico. He was training with an Austrian Bundesliga team who were fourth in the table at the time. I can't remember their name, and I'm not sure what's going on with that. He was with the team when they were in Colorado this time last week as well. I think if there's anybody who's moving out before the end of the season, I think it's Abubakar Keita. I think he probably sees that he's not, you know, in the running at least to compete. And at his age, coming back off of his injury and ready to play, he needs to play. Is that in the championship? Is that in the backwaters of Europe? Do we get a press release at 4:59 p.m. this week saying that he's been loaned to the Norwegian second division with an option to buy? I'm not entirely sure. If I had to pick one who's not with the team by the end of the MLS primary window, it's Abubakar Keita, and I'm not sure of those four ones below Bombito, unless Bombito sold for money, that all four of the three guys are still with the team by the end of the season. Mark, I think you're now asking me question number five, I believe.
Let's go, baby. All right, here we go. Chris Armas takes cup competition seriously. The Rapids haven't had a proper cup run in ages. Last year was their first time winning multiple rounds since 2006. No quarterfinals since 2003. Can the Rapids go on a cup run? Can they make noise in League's Cup or Open Cup? And with League's Cup, will it be a successful experience in the Marcelo Balboa Derby, in which the Rapids get to take on not only Club León, but additionally in our group, we've drawn the Portland Timbers.
Rapids fans, for the purpose of this conversation, we are going to assume that the Rapids first team is eligible for play in the 2024 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Armas has made it clear, Mark, you know, if there's a competition that they're in, he wants to be in it. He said it in no uncertain words at the Rapids Media Day back on MLK Day that he would prefer to let teams choose. And some teams have informally had their reserve teams play in the Open Cup and others would take it more seriously. I think even with the first team depth chart about to be sorted out in the next couple of weeks for Chris Armas, I do think he rates the second unit and thinks that the second unit playing in Open Cup, certainly against the USL League One team, against most starting 11s for the USL Championship, and against MLS teams that do not attack the Open Cup with a level of seriousness and tenacity like Chris Armas verbally has said that he wants to, that they will be able to find success. I think Armas wants those more games for the guys who maybe aren't getting those minutes. That gives you a look at a Nate Jones, a Kamani Stewart-Baines, an Ollie LaRoz who might not be able to break into and be a starter for the first team as well. I think he wants to prioritize that. I do think the Rapids should be able to do that. They want to try and be more competitive at home. If they get those home games, especially against lower opposition, they should win those games. Whether or not they can overcome the hump mark, given that the way that they've sectioned off the, given that they've regionalized Open Cup as well, at some point relatively early on, it's either you or RSL who's making a quarterfinal. There's no, both Rocky Mountain teams are not getting to a quarters or a semis without being matched up directly against each other. That is my immediate cause for pause, as we'll get to when we talk about Rocky Mountain Cup a few questions from now. In terms of Leagues Cup, I think it's a good challenge, but I also think that this is one where the Rapids can do something good. We'll get a really good barometer of where the Rapids are vis-a-vis Portland in the season opener on the 24th, where the Rapids are going to Portland, as they will for Leagues Cup as well. And Marcus, we talked about a couple weeks ago as well, Leon's a little bit down. You know, the it's the three Gigantes in terms of the two Monterrey clubs, Tigres and Monterrey, and then Club America. And then there's kind of a second tier with a gap after that. Maybe Chivas is in that. I don't know if Santos are good this year as well, Mark. Atlas had that really great year last year. And then it's a bunch of other crap to where I feel pretty confident in saying a mid-table Liga MX team and a mid-table borderline playoff team in MLS are not that far off of each other financially or competitively. If the Rapids can go and get a result at Portland, I absolutely think that they could be playing for effectively the play-in game in order to, or the group winner rubber match against against Club León. So and that'll be fantastic, Marcus, from a pageantry standpoint with Marcelo Balboa coming with the organization. Assuming the season is not completely off the rails in terms of where the league is marked, I will go out here and I'll preemptively, I reserve the right to change my answer after the 4th of July game, because there's a lot of soccer that's going to be played by that point. I will say now that the Colorado Rapids will get out of the group in Leagues Cup. Mark, let's move on to question number 6. Rafael Navajo and Lamine Diak are on loans with an option to buy in the summer. Where in the world is Sidney Tavares is another good question that I have, but if he's still with the club, he also has an option to buy. Navajo has to score goals in order to warrant that $4.5 million price tag. Diak is coming up with very little time to adjust to MLS and prove that he's worth the transfer fee. We haven't seen a lot that's convinced us on Sidney Tavares. Will these three players work out? And if some or all of them leave in the summer, what does that mean for the business and for the season? And really, Mark, particularly at the forward position, because if it's not Rafael Navajo, it's Darren Yapi, who we're not stalling the hype train, but we still have some doubts about. Or dare I say it is Kevin Cabral at the false nine, just dribbling into defenders and giving the ball away.
Yeah, I'll answer this in a slightly different way, which is I have started to become concerned with Porik Smith's penchant for the loan with a deal to buy. Now, it's a smart move in theory, unless you continually bring in players on these loan with an option to buy situations where you never wind up paying the sticker price for the buy. Because it implies to me that, like, a lot of the times the Rapids are bringing in a guy who hasn't really lit the world on fire, and they get him from this other club by dangling this giant amount of money in front of him and saying, like, if he comes good, we'll pay you an exorbitant fee, which they never do because they don't tend to be worth the fee, which means we kind of get him on loan for 6 months, and it's almost like a trick. I'm wondering if every other team in the world starts to figure out, like, the Rapids will never buy at the rate that you set for them. So that's my concern. That's my starting point, which is maybe people are going to pick up that, like, we usually don't buy that guy. The problem with the Rafael Navajo deal is exactly what you spelled out in the question. Matt, by the way, this is a running problem. Matt's questions are, as attorneys in a courtroom might say, they're often leading questions. And it was great because a couple of moments ago, like, Matt and I really disagreed about how the midfield would play out and how the center backs would play out. We totally disagree on that, which is pretty rare for this podcast. So, you know, everybody, you know, hoist a glass for something rare that you haven't seen happen before. But to answer the question straight up, it would be very hard to justify a $4.5 million transfer fee for Navajo. And I think that that's really a problem. Because if he scores 8 goals by mid-season, he's done a good job, but he hasn't blown our doors off. You know, I think we're looking for like 10 or 12. And, you know, anything less than 10 is going to wind up basically saying like $4.5 million is a lot of money. And here's the other thing that you didn't mention in your question, Matt. Thank you for not giving everything away, which is the Rapids just paid a transfer fee for Jordy Mihailovic. And so Jordy Mihailovic is going to sap up some of that money. I believe, I can look it up, but I think that amortized, they have to pay, they have to contribute $750,000 a year, towards that fee. So I think over 3 years.
I don't know what the per year was, Mark, but I have heard the fee was absolutely,
I was guessing at it.
It was north of 3, south of 4, and that is including potential incentives, which I've been unable to confirm or deny their existence of. So, for the purpose of the conversation, let's say 3 mil and change.
Yeah, I don't know how the, right. So I wrote down, because I don't figure transfer fees in my spreadsheet because I don't need to, because I only need to worry about how much money they have from year to year. And if you can, and you get to amortize the cost of your deal over the length of the contract. And so all I have written down is that the Mihailovic transfer fee is a $750,000 ding this year because Mihailovic is on a contract that goes until the year 2027. So, but that's based on the rumors. Anyways, point being, how much funny money do the Rapids have to play with? Even to make a big transfer fee signing, I don't know. Like, that's another, like, separate question. Lamine Diak is, we have no input whatsoever. He hasn't played much in Turkey. He didn't play much in France. We really don't know if he's going to play much for the Rapids. I don't think he will. I think he is a really, really long, Hail Mary player. My guess is that he goes back mid-year. And Sidney Tavares wasn't even in the original question. You just threw it in on the fly. And that's because none of us are remembering Sidney Tavares. Sidney Tavares is the new Max Alves, except without the gambling problem.
Oof.
In the sense that he was a guy. We've seen him do some things. He has a little bit of sauce. He seems like a very nice guy. But he hasn't really, he didn't really fit in the second half of last season. I would love to see him succeed. I never root against anybody, especially if they're playing for the Rapids. I only root against FSL, RSL. But that's my take, is that we there's a slim chance that we pay the transfer fee for any of those three players. All right, let's keep going. Keep this truck a rolling. This is a great tactical question, Matt. I'm envious that you get this one, but you deserve it. The Rapids were so predictable last year. They play out of the back. They turn it over for an unfixable mistake. They come in unprepared. They concede. Do the Rapids fix the tactical problems that they demonstrated last year? And if so, how?
Maybe the most, or one of the most disheartening things about last season, Mark, was just going into games where you felt like you knew what was already going to happen, like it had already happened. One of the beauties of sports is that it's unscripted. In theory, anything can happen. You know, a fourth division Spanish team could upset Real Madrid or Barcelona in the Copa del Rey on their best day. And I was sitting up there in the press box. I saw the lineup from the Rapids. I saw the lineup from the opposition. And I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen. I know how it's going to happen. And I know exactly what Robin Fraser is going to say post game. And I'm lost for different ways to ask the same question about why this team is so consistently bad and has the same problems. There's a few ways that I think Chris Armas is going to attack this defensive issue and the habits that were present last year. One, I do think they are going to be more direct. We're going to see less passing out of the back in terms of passing side to side. There's going to be more vertical stuff going on. I do think that Zach Steffen is better playing out of the back, certainly, than William Yarbrough, and I think there's enough stats that shows what Ilicho was doing in Belgium and what he was doing in MLS vis-a-vis what we saw from Zach Steffen in the Bundesliga. I think it was the Bundesliga. It might have been the two Bundesliga at Dusseldorf. And then certainly in the championship on loan at Middlesbrough and in the sparing minutes that he got at Manchester City as well. So I do think Steffen improves it from a goalkeeper standpoint. I have to think with the back line basically being three returning starters, if we're talking about Maxo, one of the center backs who's not Nate Jones, I think Bumbito, and then Keegan Rosenberry. There's more continuity there. And then you return Sam Vines. That's only going to help you in terms of mobility, dealing with transition play for and against, and then being solid in possession. There is still that question for me about who's playing at the six next to Connor Ronan. We saw Ronan be paired up with a lot of people, and it didn't really work from a possession standpoint. Ralph Preso was aloof in terms of his positioning in order to play out of the back and then slow to react in terms of defensive situations. Already talked about what Sidney Tavares was and was not in that context. And so I think they play more direct. I do think they're better set up to, when they do play out of the back, deal with those moments as well. The thing that gives me optimism is Chris Armas in his interview process with the club and in media availability I've seen, and I've heard it third hand from other people who were speaking to him, not in an interview talking to a technical person at the club, and then also not in a media context talking about how the Rapids cannot beat themselves. This needs to be a team that is hard to beat. This needs to be a team that does not make the mistakes that get you punished in this league, especially when you are playing more talented, more financially supported attacking players. And so I have to believe that just fundamentally he's not going to allow those mental lapses, and he is going to set the team up to deal with the press and deal with issues around their defensive third better than they had been in the past. And so in that regard, that's deviating from the plan less than maybe Robin Fraser did by the final 10-15 games that he had with the team. But in that regard, Mark, I think Chris Armas is going much more for prevention rather than coming up with a cure. In terms of, the Armas isn't coming in to say, I'm going to set us up such that we turn the ball over in our own half. We are in a better position defensively to deal with that. He wants to prevent those turnovers and those situations that potentially lead to turnovers entirely. Mark, let us move on to question number 8. Colorado Rapids have won just one Rocky Mountain Cup. Two Rocky Mountain Cup wins for the Pids in the past decade. RSL is 14-5 all time, and the Rapids, two of those five came in the first 2 years for RSL. Kind of a grace period if you're thinking about a expansion team in MLS 2.0. Do the Rapids finally win the Rocky Mountain Cup in a non-pandemic season? Jasper Lofelzen revenge tour, question mark. Omer Fernandez did have a very good habit of scoring in Hudson River derbies. Does he carry that over to the Rockies? Or Rabbi Mark Goodman, will the Rapids be outplayed in those first two games in Sandy and blow it before they even get to host RSL in the final MLS game before the League's Cup break on July 20th?
I am going to be optimistic this year about the Rocky Mountain Cup. I'm feeling optimistic in general about the Colorado Rapids, not about the Open Cup. I would have answered that question in the negative, but I will answer the Rocky Mountain Cup question in the affirmative. We have really been terrible at the Rocky Mountain Cup for the last many, many years. The last time they claimed it was, last time they even won a Rocky Mountain Cup game was August 21st. 2021 at home, but over the last couple of years, we have 3 wins since 2016, which is abominable. It's just horrendous. So we got 3 games coming up, 2 away and 1 at home. That usually doesn't bode well for us. The Rapids also have a history of going into what used to be called Rio Tinto, which apparently starting last year, was called America First Field. Do not like that name. Not a fan. Although Rio Tinto was named for a mining company, and mining companies, in the best of times, Matt is the environmental engineer. He could probably speak to this better than I can, but in mining companies, in the best of times, have spotty environmental records. I believe Rio Tinto specifically had some serious South American mining violations.
Don't drink the round water. Don't go into the pit. Don't breathe the air.
That's right. Yeah. And I just, there was also, speaking of environmentalism, the clear crystal air of Denver, Colorado, except for the moment when the wind blows down from Greeley, is quite lovely compared to the miserable temperature inverted cesspool that lurks over Salt Lake City. This is one of those moments where some of our Rapids fans who are in Salt Lake should chime in and share their opinion. Anyways, point being, even though the Rapids tend to do poorly on the road at RSL, even though the Rapids haven't been very good at the Rocky Mountain Cup, I feel like this is the year. The last time the Rapids won away was September 12th, 2020, at RSL. They won that game 5-0. So, I remember that one vaguely. But I don't have a strong memory of that whole year because COVID. So, I don't have any, by the way, one of the things about, you know, doing this kind of podcast this year, and the questions that we often ask in the preseason predictions is they are definitely vibes questions. Like, there's no way that I know, anything about the Rocky Mountain Cup, but I did do my season preview, over the Western Conference. I noted that RSL are pretty happy at standing pat. They haven't really upgraded many of their, players or positions. They were pretty happy with how things came out last week and last year, and I don't think that's going to cut it in this league. I predicted, small spoiler alert, this article will probably drop tomorrow. I predict the Rapids will finish the end of the season in 7th and RSL will finish in 8th, and it would be very, very sweet if what separated us in the table is only our wins in the Rocky Mountain Cup. Question number 9. With all the Europe-based players coming to Colorado and those who stuck around, the team has become capital something to prove FC. Will Armas prove the haters he was the right hire? Will the USMNT European hopefuls resurrect their careers? And lastly, is Jonathan Lewis mad that we reported he was getting traded? That's a lot of questions, Matt.
It is. I'll start with as was discussed, Mark, in my interview over the weekend with Designated Players the Designated Players podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes for those of you who want to see their perspective, an Atlanta and a Red Bull fan perspective on the Rapids based on the questions they asked me. I think Chris Normus will prove that he is a better coach than when he made that horrible tactical gaffe, Rabbi, in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2018 against Atlanta United. I think he is a better coach now than he was in that moment. I think he will prove that even with his failures that happened in that moment and his 3 other jobs since then, that he has learned from those and he is a better coach now than he had been at any point in with those previous employers. And I do think the Rapids will be to a net benefit for that. The Rapids got the right guy for the job in that regard. And I think at the end of the day, there will be a number of people who will be issuing Chris Armas an apology or a "you proved me wrong" kind of a thing before his contract is out, you know, at the end of 2025. In terms of the other young players, I think they have a very clear, they are known quantities in MLS, and they have a very clear floor that is way better than a lot of the ceilings that we had from the Rapids at the goalkeeper position, at the left back position prior to Andrew Gutman being acquired last year in the case of Sam Vines. And then certainly I think Jordy Mihailovic is, you know, has much more upside and youth and potential national team, European resale value, etc., than Diego Rubio was ever going to have in 2024 for the Colorado Rapids, or now with Austin FC, because clearly the answer that Austin has in terms of their roster build is to bring back the 2022 Colorado Rapids attack with him and with Jossie Zardes. So in terms of, I don't know that any of these guys get into the national team. I still think there's so many new pieces at this club to where there's going to be an adjustment period in the first third of the season. We won't talk specifically about this, Mark, from a scheduling standpoint, but those first 7 games are a really, really tough start for me. I don't think that the Rapids are in a playoff spot 7 games into the season. And I think that's going to dent any opportunity that any of these USMNT hopefuls have in terms of getting into the Copa America squad for Greg Berhalter. That being said, I do think there is still time for them to do enough for the Rapids this year or next year, then get a move out to Europe to get another opportunity. The one player who I'd make an exception for that is Zach Steffen, just because prior to him getting injured and then falling off the cliff for City and then with Middlesbrough, he was Greg Berhalter's favorite going back to their time together at Columbus. Jordy Mihailovic, the position that he's competing with guys who are starting at clubs that are in the top third of the top 5 league and are competing with for trophies. He is competing with Christian Pulisic. He is competing with Gio Reyna. He is competing with Tim Weah. And so balling out or even being an MVP dark horse for a Colorado Rapids team that probably isn't making a conference final isn't enough for me in terms of getting back in with the national team. spoke to Sam Bynes last week after training. And I asked him whether or not he had had any conversations with Greg Berhalter. And he said no, he was focusing on what was going to work for him. And he wanted to get into a better position on the field, off the field. If you follow him and or people who are close in his family, he's got a lot of big life milestones that are coming up, you know, as he's engaged to be married. And they haven't picked a date. At least that's what he told me last week as well. So I think Sam Bynes just wants to get back to being happy off the field and then playing regularly and then be enjoying his football and everything. And then if national team opportunities or European opportunities come up, those will happen naturally as well. I do think, Mark, the depth, so that's the concern that I have, the fact that he didn't talk about it with Greg, whereas I feel like Greg Berhalter spoke to Stefan at least briefly and then Jordy Mihailovic about their moves back to MLS, where I have optimism for the Sam Bynes situation is that you've just seen the USMNT try so many other guys when Jedi Robinson isn't available or when he's being rotated out that I don't know that there's a clear number two that you like other than Joe Scally. And I think you like Joe Scally more on the right, backing up or as a tactical alternative to Sergino Dest than you like him out of position with just the physical freak that is Anthony Robinson. And so I do think there's a clear gap and there's a low threshold in terms of getting in the conversation to be that backup for Anthony Robinson in ways that I think there's a very high ceiling for Jordy Mihailovic or a Cole Bassett to get in. And I think the only hope that Zach Steffen has coming back to MLS, given his competition, is, you know, starting in Europe, albeit, you know, Matt Turner's had a rough couple of weeks for Nottingham Forest, and I think they could be in trouble this year. Like, the starting and playing poorly on a Premier League team that gets relegated, I feel like is better than being a good shot stopper on an average MLS team that doesn't go anywhere. I want to believe that that's the case. And that is why Tim Howard and Brad Guzan got lots of minutes for the national team. And Nick Raimondo was the third string guy, you know, this time a decade ago. So I think Armas has something to prove, and I think he will prove stuff. I think Cole Bassett gets back to the form that he was in 2021 that led to his European opportunity. I think Sam Bynes proves to be, again, one of the most versatile and two-way fullbacks in the league. I think Jordy Mihailovic, his floor is what Diego Rubio was, I'll say, not 2022 because he was awesome, but like the Diego Rubio's amortized average over the course of all of his time at the Rapids, and his ceiling is Ryan Gaul, dark horse for MLS MVP. And so in that regard, I think a lot of guys will progress back to their mean, and some of them will absolutely prove the something that they have to prove. And Mark, I think that Jonathan Lewis is scoring goals because he's in a direct system that works for him really well, where he can do stuff in transition and be a speed merchant, and I don't know that he's doing this specifically to get redemption because he was probably going to get traded, and it turns out he didn't have trade value. But any case, Mark, let us move on to question number 10. Last year was rock bottom for the club on and off the field. There was that fan protest in September that was the story of the season for you, me, and others. Rapid supporters are increasingly fed up with KSC. They had that whole survey where they were asking for fan responses and everything, and fans absolutely let them have it. Mark, will Kroenke finally mend this broken relationship with the fan base? If so, how?
All right. This is actually the easiest question that you've asked today to anyone, or that either of us have had to answer, in my humble opinion. So if you want to flash back, dear listeners, go back in your minds all the way to April of 2021, when Arsenal had just gone through a tremendously terrible season where they finished, I believe, at the end of the season in eighth. But it was just a general season where for even a brief, like, 2 week stretch, somewhere around, December, Arsenal Football Club were hovering around the relegation line. And fans were absolutely furious. And they went to the Emirates Stadium and they protested Kroenke out. The manager got fired. They went out and hired Mikel Arteta. Arteta struggled at the beginning of 2022, but they kind of stuck with it. And then things turned around. And in 2022 and 2023, Arsenal had two very good seasons. And you don't really hear a lot of Kroenke out complaints anymore across the pond in North London. And that's my take also on the Rapids and the Kroenke out protest. We have even less leverage as Rapids fans than Arsenal fans do. Arsenal fans are just really loud, and they're going to wind up on the cover of the newspaper, of the Times and the Guardian and all the big tabloids in England. You know, a Rapids, you know, fan protest, even with a walkout, even with black shirts, even with, you know, the Rapids C-38 section being vacated, is not going to draw that much media attention, and it doesn't hit Kroenke where it matters, which is in the wallet. He won't be moved by 500 fans or 1,000 fans, 2,000 fans boycotting a couple games. And season tickets probably haven't fallen off significantly, even after a horrendous year last year. The other thing that I'll say, the more important thing I'll say, is this. Everybody, including me and Matt, I think Horik Smith did everything you could as a small to mid-market club in the offseason to build a good team. And short of going the full Arthur Blank, Jorge, and Jose Mas, Seattle Sounders, damn the torpedoes, spend all the money approach, the Rapids are playing small ball pretty well. You know, they've used their DP position without spending the most money on a DP they possibly could. They have a couple TAM level players who are very good. They went out and found players who had been disappointing in Europe and were American players and would want to come back, which had two benefits. Number one, they are players who come into the league with a chip on their shoulder. Zach Steffen and Georgi Mihailovic want to do things. Sam Bynes wants to do things this season. And two, you don't have to pay additional money for another international slot because you're using your domestic players. They don't count against the international slot because they're American. So those are huge advantages, and you can't do that at every position. You know, look at what FC Dallas did when they went out and got Heder Musa, who is their new DP striker, who they paid a $10 million transfer fee for. He also is an international, so you gotta have an international slot lined up for him, and if you don't have one, you gotta go out and get one, and the going rate for an international slot is $250. My point is, as the Rapids go, so will the protests against Kroenke. If the Rapids have another Pidsgiving top of the Western Conference year, or even a year where they get to the playoffs this year, no one's going to complain about the Kroenke ownership. The only complaint that regularly will come towards the Kroenke ownership group is a legitimate one that Matt and I will probably write about this season too at some point, which is that our facilities are beginning to lag behind the rest of the league, right? We don't have a stadium that is nearly big enough for the MLS that has Zlatan and Messi and even David Beckham, right? We've been surpassed in MLS 3.0 by every other team in the league. You need a stadium that seats 20,000, and the bigger teams in the league are seating 60,000 for games. A stadium that maxes out at 16 and 19 if you add folding chairs in the corners is not good enough. I'm not a fan of every fan in the Rapids world's idea of, you know, we need to move downtown because a downtown stadium would cost an obscene amount of money, and there's no place in the Lodo downtown area to put it unless they tear down Elitch Gardens, which they're not gonna because it makes too much money. It's just not gonna happen. So I think there's a huge advantage also to being in Commerce City. I think that all those soccer fields that are out there are really great. I think the city of Denver is growing. I've said this before, but I'll say it really quickly again. The city of Denver is growing, and it is growing to the east towards Aurora, out towards the suburbs, towards the airport. I think we're in a good spot. We just got to build a bigger, better, nicer stadium in that spot. Matt wants to add something. Go ahead,
Mark. A quick correction for you. They are tearing down Elitch Garden. They are turning it into a housing development with some affordable housing.
But they're not tearing all of it down, right? They're tearing some of it down?
They're doing it in stages. But, like, stuff is being built around Elitch Gardens, moving north on I-25. I don't remember where and everything. But, yeah, the We did a podcast, Rabbi, I think during lockdown before MLS's back even got announced, and we hypothesized about places the Rapids could move downtown.
Right.
And I think it was the whichever that largest of the lots next to the can downtown off of Spear and 25. Dick's, the footprint of Dick's fits in with that. I absolutely did that measurement on Google Earth as well, but clearly they're not doing
such
that.
A nerd.
And so yeah, that's not happening. There's other stuff that's gonna happen.
So my point is the Cronkies will not mend the broken relationship with the fan base. Winning will make us all forget about how much the ownership drives us nuts. The facilities, however, will continue to drive us nuts until something gets done.
I should point out, Rabbi, that the Rapids did replace four of their practice pitches in this offseason, so two grass and two turf ones as well. So between the stadium pitch and the new grass pitches and the fact that winter has been relatively mild in terms of temperature and snowfall, I'm hoping that we don't see a bunch of muscle injuries and also like catastrophic knee injuries between now and certainly the end of winter going into April. But yeah, there's still concerns about the rest of the playing facilities for the rest of the players. And then there's obviously still very much concerns about the bare bone minimalist stadium that the Rapids have redeveloping the West Tower, be damned.
And the north side, yeah, that whole north side.
Oh my god.
Matt, you get the 11th of 11 questions. For those who don't know much about soccer, 11 is the number of players on the field. That's why you picked 11 questions, right, Matt? Thankfully, Matt didn't come up with 18 questions. That would have been a lot, because there's 18 players who are allowed to be on the roster, at least at current FIFA numbers. You never know when they're going to change the rules once again. Hint, hint, blue cards. Hint, hint, we'll talk about it on another podcast. Matt, final question goes to you. Chris Armas has a habit of blowing it in big games. The Rapids can't seem to get over the hump at the end of the year against more talented and more expensive teams. Will their weaknesses compound into fall disappointment? Or will this team finally win a playoff game for the first time since 2016?
I think this question ultimately is going to define the season and how we feel about it in terms of in the macro at the end of the day, at the end of the season. And I also think, Mark, this is fundamentally the question around what prompted the Rapids way. Apology for the no trigger warning, Rapids fans. But, you know, Mark, the Rapids way, or what the Rapids have done in terms of getting back to the plan, since the Rapids way is now, you know, taboo word to say for Porrick Smith in press conferences, was the we're on a budget, MLS is evolving, we're falling behind. Is there a way that we can be competitive given our limitations? And so fundamentally, again, the same thing that I've heard from Porrick Smith 100 times, we want to be a perennial playoff team, we want to bring a second MLS Cup back to Colorado. And while I like what they've done this offseason, to your point, Rabbi, I don't know that there's a single, other than my own bias towards Danny Wilson, and then maybe not giving Jack Price the extra $200K it would have taken in order for you to keep him around and everything, I don't know that there's another move that has happened this offseason that I can fundamentally disagree with. If you can get rid of Diego Rubio and then get Jordy Mihailovic, you get it. Zach Steffen on a free transfer, you bring him in. Sam Vines on probably a
Sam
very
Vines!
Cheap...
We got Sam Vines back!
You know, and then between the draft picks, you know, I've been impressed with every single one of them and the approach that led to selecting those players as well. But fundamentally, can you go up against teams that have 2-3x, you know, your salary, and can you beat them in a head-to-head game where they're probably at home and you're at a talent deficit in a must-win game where everybody's going max out? And so then the normal thing that you have of that the Rapids have of the power of friendship and maximum effort is not the same delta relative to the opponent as well. And can you do that 2-3 times to get to and win an MLS Cup? And I don't know that you can, Mark. I think the data is pretty well out there in the last 10 years that it's the big money teams with a good head coach and good contributing DPs and a well-built, well-funded roster are the ones that win trophies. The ones with megastars are the ones that win trophies, and the Rapids are not that. And as much as they spent this offseason, as much as they've upgraded this roster, they are still not that. It would take another 2x of spending of what they already had on a consistent annual basis, not just a, okay, let's throw $5 million at the problem in order to solve the roster right now, in order to do that. And so I could totally see, Mark, where we have this bittersweet feeling, or we have this sense of unfulfillment, or trying to find the silver lining at the end of the year when the Rapids have a great season and then just run into a juggernaut in the playoffs and huff and puff and try really hard and get really close. And there's one half chance for Emmanuel Reynoso or for the new guy that Seattle's gotten as well. And then he gets that chance and that ends the Rapids season. And the Rapids were never even really that close to begin with. So I don't have the answer to this yet, Mark. We'll get to this in a minute. I do think the Rapids make the playoffs. I do think they get a home playoff game. But fundamentally, like, I still wonder if they've done enough to get over the bar of advancing in the playoffs. And you compound that with, this is a problem that this club has had historically, that the front office has had, that this a number of players who've been with this roster have had in these big games. And on top of that, you have a head coach who, in the biggest game of his head coaching career, absolutely fumbled it in terms of the approach. Like, this is the Achilles heel, Mark. Are the 2024 Colorado Rapids just going to be the inevitable Greek tragedy that all of my PTSD and scar tissue says that they are and always will be? I realize I'm not answering the question. I'm just throwing the question back to you. So let's move on. Rapi, let's do some rapid fire right here. We won't do seedings yet, Mark. We can save that for another day. But Rabbi Mark Goodman, do the Rapids make the playoffs? Yes, no.
We make the playoffs. What do you think, Matt?
I think they make the playoffs as well. You, I think, alluded to it earlier, Mark, but just to get you on the record, Rapids, Rocky Mountain Cup, yes or no?
We win the Rocky Mountain Cup this year. We get it back. We start to even the score. What do you think?
No, I will believe it when I see it. The RSL beating the Rapids at Rio Tinto in Sandy, Utah, America First Field, is way more inevitable than the Rapids losing to a better team on paper than in the playoffs. Okay, Mark, let's just briefly touch on, Rabbi, I want to talk about the actual preseason, because preseason games happen. We got more videos of the goals that were scored. Mark, in the last 16 games, after a really frustrating first game where they only scored one on a penalty by Jonathan Lewis, the Rapids have 16 goals in three preseason games. Lewis has three. Navajo has three. Cole Bassett has two. There's a bunch of other players with assists that and well. Calvin Harris is cooking, Mark. I think Calvin's on four. I'd have to look that up. Kamani Stewart-Baines is getting assists. Mark, are you optimistic by what the Rapids have done in preseason, or fundamentally you question whether or not the Mexican teams were rolling out second teams, and is Montreal secretly trash? And so then when the Rapids score a bunch of goals this time tomorrow against Hartford Athletic, coached by Brendan Burke, former Colorado Springs Switchbacks head coach, are we still waiting, Mark, for the Rapids to get to playing Orlando, a competent MLS team, before you think that we're just going to score goals and win every game 5-0?
I still don't know what to make of preseason. I mean, I think that the other data point that I was filled in on, Paul Tenorio has a really good article in The Athletic about Inter Miami's abortive preseason trip to Europe, they went to Hong Kong, they went to Tokyo, and they went to Saudi Arabia, and they played a whole bunch of games, and they didn't have healthy players, and Messi didn't play most of it, and they lost most of their games, and in fact, Cristiano Ronaldo and his boys, who are not, Al Nassr is the team. By the way, the top four teams in the Saudi league are all owned by the Saudi league, but the rest of the teams are not owned by the Saudi league. They're not owned by the league. They're actually owned by the development company that is owned by the Saudi crown princes. It gets weird. Anyway,
the public investment fund.
That's the one. How come Mark, you know
would you rather,
that?
Rabbi?
Anyways,
my point
is this. Wait, let me finish the thought before, and then you can interrupt the thought that I was about to finish. Otherwise, I'll never get it back. The point is, if Inter Miami can be bad and then do what I think they're going to do in the regular season, which is be really good, then the Rapids can be good in the preseason and then go out and be bad in the regular season. I don't think there's a lot of correlation. Back to you, Matt.
The preseason doesn't matter until it does, and the preseason so far, given the opposition and their quality, does not matter as much. I look forward to, Mark, the Rapids giving more of the reserve and the younger players a run out against USL Championship opposition tomorrow against Hartford Athletic, and I hope that it's a proper, like, simulating an actual game against Orlando on the weekend, early next week. I can't remember when that Orlando game is, and if the Rapids go out there and go toe-to-toe with a team that is coached by Oscar Pereja and has spent money and will be a playoff team this year, and Matt Doyle has them as a dark horse for the supporter shield, if the Rapids can go toe-to-toe with both teams trying like it's an actual regular season game, then I'll have some belief in that. I was about to interrupt you a minute ago, Mark, because I wanted to make a joke about how funny would it be if like Don Garber bought the Rapids, and would we rather have Don Garber as the commissioner of MLS also be the owner of the Rapids, or would we still want to keep Stan Kroenke? But in any case, it'd be annoying and I wouldn't enjoy the press conferences. Rabbi, let us move on to some rapid fire questions that we had. We got a bunch of engagements on a tweet that I sent out asking for Ask HDHLs. So Mark, we'll do each one of these. I'll throw them back and forth. Jason Maxwell asked, how good is this team if we don't buy Navajo and Diok in midsummer and have to finish the season without them? And then Judgmental Jim followed up with, what about Tavares' status? What's going on there, I wonder? Judgmental Jim, so Sidney Tavares has, I think he might have been in that first Mexican friendly, but he has not been in with the team, at least not listed as taking the field in preseason since then. I have reason to believe that he was not with the club for the entire duration in Mexico. I have reason to believe he was not with the club for the entire week that they were back in Colorado. I highly, highly doubt that Sidney Tavares will be a member of the Colorado Rapids for much longer. And I think if anything happens, I think it would be allowed for that loan to be terminated, even though it is outside of the transfer window in case of him going back to Portugal. Or maybe they're looking for him to get loaned somewhere else because it was a loan to MLS and then to the Rapids. But because of single entity, he could more freely move within the league as well. To answer Jason Maxwell's question directly, I'm not so much concerned about Diak because I feel like the second options that you have there in the Jasper Lofelsen, a slight tactical positional change as well, Mihailovic or Bassett moving back, I feel more comfortable about that than I do the striker options if it's not Rafael Navajo. So whether or not Diak is good, I think we know that Jasper Lofelsen is at worst like a bang average replacement level MLS number 6, and that is way better than where the Rapids were at the D-mid position last year. What happens if the Rapids don't retain Navajo for whatever reason is a really good question at the forward position. Has Darren Yapi scored a goal by the time we get to the 1st of July? Do we see Kevin Cabral, who's been mostly a reserve player when it's come to preseason minutes right now? I do not think Kevin Cabral is a starter on this team. I'm not even sure. I think he makes the bench. I don't think he's the first wide attacking sub off of the bench on this team right now. Do we see Calvin Harris slightly out of position? I'm not entirely sure, Jason, and that gives me reasons to be really, really scared. Navajo has to work, and then the Rapids have to not dicker around with the option to buy and then renegotiating like they have done in the past, because if they lose him, you're looking at, okay, let's go spend that money again on another DP forward. That guy's probably coming from outside the league. Does it take us a while to get him? Does he miss League Cup in its entirety? And then do we see the Gauss theorem of him having to get used to the league by the time, you know, he rounds into form and the team gets used to him? Following up, Rabbi, I'll throw this question to you. Scott Hammond, follow-up, asks, how many goal contributions does Navajo need to get purchased in the summer outright or after renegotiation? Rabbi, the Navajo loan expires on June 30th. On June 29th, the Rapids will have played their 19th league game, and that will be at LAFC. Mark, how many goals in 19 games do you need to see from Navajo for him to be worth 4.5 milli?
Well, I was saying before, if you fast forwarded to the end, I don't know why you would have done that, but I endorse skipping around on podcasts when you need to. Maybe the kids were screaming and you needed to reach back and slap one. Don't slap your kids. I think 8 is what he'll get, and I think 10 is what he needs. He needs 10 goals in 19 games for the Rapids to feel good about picking up $4.5 million. It's a lot of goals to get, and I don't think he's likely to be able to do it. Simple answer.
I'll say a goal for 2 games as well, Mark. So give me 9-10. He gets to double digits in all comps, open cup or otherwise. No open cup, because then he could easily get like a hat trick against Hailstorm. 10 goals by the end, by full time of that 19th game and everything, then I think he's worth it, because then you think 19 games, you prorate that for another third of the season, you've got a 15 goal striker. I think that is good money in Major League Soccer for that as your DP striker. And then a couple questions from @DavidHammer9. I'll throw this first one to you, Mark. Is Johnny back, or is he auditioning for another club? And I want to shout out Doty Robbins, who is there on Jalu Island banging the drum and making fires all on his own. You know, Jody, you are, we abandoned Jonathan Lewis, you know, almost a year ago now at this point. Mark, is Jonathan Lewis back, or is this just preseason stuff as well? Do you expect him to be a starter? Does it matter? Does he have resale value?
Jonathan Lewis is Jonathan Lewis, meaning he is absolutely good to tear it up for 15 minutes on the pitch and look like a bat out of hell, and then wander around the pitch for 45 minutes looking like a man waiting for a bus. And then he is pretty much good for 5 goals and 4 assists every season, whether he gets 1,000 minutes or 2,000 minutes, and he never gets 3,000 minutes. So he is what it is. You just got to be okay with that. He's a useful role player. He will change the dynamic in terms of speed. So if you're going to start with Cole Bassett and then sub in Jonathan Lewis, or if you're going to start with Omer Fernandez and then sub in Jonathan Lewis, or if you're going to start with Jonathan Lewis and then sub in Georgi Mihailovic, those are really nice shifts to tempo, but they're not. He's not an everyday 30 games a year, 3,000 minutes kind of guy. It's just not what he does. And he's never going to score 15 goals or get 10 assists. It's also not what he does. Does that mean that the Rapids could wave him over the tantalizing appetite of some other club who think that they can turn him into a 10-goal scorer? Possibly, but I think his resale value is low and will continue to be. It's really only a question of whether he or his agent think he can go someplace else and either get more money or get more minutes. You know, maybe he's really bought into this team. Maybe he's excited about a fresh start with a new coach. I think that those are all possible options. I have been on team Free Johnny for like 2 years now. But then again, me and Matt were once on team Diego Rubio is terrible. He'll never score any goals. And then he went out and put 16 in, and we were both wrong. And we like being wrong when it means the Rapids are good.
I would love to see Jonathan Lewis get 7 goals all comps in league play. I would probably take 5, and I think 5 would be appropriate given the number of minutes that I think he is going to get or not get. Rather,
over under 1,000 minutes, Matt. What do you think?
All comps?
Sure.
I'll take if he's healthy. If the turf monster doesn't get him in the next 2 months, I'll say over. I'll put it like his ceiling's got to be 1,500 for me. That's on a high. Something else has happened in the case of this club at the wide position for him to be forced into that. We've only got 2 more minutes here, Mark, because we both have a hard stop. I've got to get to an EWB meeting, and you got to go pick up the wifey at the airport. So
no, I got to pick up my kid at rehearsal for the musical. My two kids are both in musicals. One's in Frozen, and one's in Mean Girls. So this one is at Mean Girls.
Okay, we don't have time for that, Rabbi, though that's something we're going to unpack off.
You can start next week.
Okay, where in the world is Marco Ilicha? Hammer asks as well. He is with the team in preseason. As far as I know, he has been training with the club. He got minutes in one of the 3 friendlies that we saw in Mexico, Hammer, and then the Rapids were then not including the goalkeeper position when they were doing lineup announcements for the line changes they had at the various intermissions during the other preseason friendlies. So Stefan was announced as a starter, and then they didn't include Stefan in here's the lineup for starting the second half or the third quarter or the second period or what have you. And so does that mean Stefan is staying on because he's the new goalkeeper and he's for sure going to be the starter? Was Ilicha getting some minutes in there? Was Adam Beaudry getting some minutes in there? I don't know that Marco Ilicha has resale value. Most of the windows in Europe have closed if he wanted to go back to Europe, which would be the easiest thing for that to happen. And I don't think the Rapids are selling him for a massive deficit, given, as I've reported, they paid in guaranteed transfer dollars $800K for him, you know, last summer as well. So I think Ilicha is here, and I think he is de facto the backup to Zach Steffen right now. And then Hammer's third question: will we get Biker Jims back again, or is GB Fish and Chips coming back? I think the bridge is burned with GBs personally. I haven't heard anything about Biker Jims staying or going. On the long list of things that KSC knows they need to improve, the Scranton situation, and it was improved from 2022 to 2023. I would be totally okay with Biker Jims coming back, and I hope that it is. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids 9-6 podcast. Check out Rabbi's written content at the Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can check out most of my Rapids writing at The Burgundy Wave, and you can ask us your questions just like all of these people did using the hashtag AskHTHL on the socials. We're also on Facebook. I'm pretty sure we're still on Blue Sky and Instagram. I'd have to check those. We're not active on those. The Bird app is still working for the most part there. And then if you want to get in touch in long form, Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Listeners, we will see you next week to preview the season opener at Portland Timbers.
You also have just two more weeks to become a subscriber to Holding the Highline at the Highliner subscription level at the current price of $42 a year. That gets you the merch. We're giving out t-shirts this year with our new logo on it. They're going to be workout shirts, good for the gym, good for running, good for sweating, whatever you do that gets you and keeps you healthy. I can't wait till the weather gets a little bit better so I can be motivated to start running again, so I can sweat and work off this muffin top that I've been developing. Once the season drops and we kick off the ball the first time, the price will go up. So lock in your rate at $42 before the price goes up, ladies and gentlemen, and get that t-shirt and become a supporting Highliner. Folks, thanks for all your support up till now. We'll see you next week. Peace!
You made that joke on the first episode of podcast.
Is that true?
Yes.
It's not my joke. I'm just stealing it from what's his name.